You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to another episode of That's a Wrap Podcast. Newsflash, the Raptors lost a game one. I am your co-host, Jay Rosales, joined by Dre and our producer, Jason. I want to ask you guys how you're doing, but I have a feeling I know how it's like, because I get the feeling we've all felt this feeling before, right?
So you're saying in this logic, we all, you know, we lost the game one before. And in that case, we're fine, right? Is that how that works?
Yep, that's how it works. We walk in with a ton of confidence and walk out of it feeling like crap.
Yeah, well, no, luckily, for sure.
Luckily, the Raptors are used to adjustments, and we've got a coach who specializes in adjustments, Nick Nurse, because after that game one, let me tell you, a good chunk of it was, we didn't play very well, and we have to figure out how to stop them from playing very well. So, Boys, how did this look?
It wasn't very good. So, okay, basically, Raptors fans, we're gonna sit here and we're gonna let you know what we feel about the Raptors. Of course, honestly, they sucked, and there wasn't really much to talk about. But we will go through it just a little bit. But I thought it'd be nice, and honestly, for my own mental, that we could kind of talk about other things outside of basketball. Yes, it is game one of the second round playoffs. Yes, it is basketball, and yes, this is a Raptors related podcast. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other things outside of basketball, because let's be real, basketball always and should always secondary to whatever is going on, all the things that are going on in this world. So first off, I don't want to brush aside this whole game, but I mean, the Raptors didn't look very good. I'm not going to start saying they're, you know, mentally out of it, because that's unfair. However, I do feel like there is a little bit exhaustion when it comes to the players. I think that there's, for the last couple of days, there has been a lot going on and to these players, and I feel like for us fans, there has been a lot going on, and I don't discredit them for feeling the same. Outside of the actual basketball game, though, I mean, Jay, I want you to throw out some numbers out there for me, because I know that I know one stat was flying out there is that the fact that Marcus Smart shot more 3-pointers than the entire Raptors team. So I don't want to get too much into the Raptors, because I do want to talk to you guys about everything else. But, you know, let's hear the numbers, bro.
I don't want to jump too far, too deep into the numbers. I think the biggest aspect that jumped out to me was that the Boston Celtics hit 7 more threes than the Raptors. That's a total of 21 points, and the Raptors lost by 18. So you can really boil it down to that. I'm kind of waiting for the advanced stats to come out, but biggest area where the Celtics really excelled was the corner threes. And that's a concern, because that's the area that the Raptors don't mind leaving open to their opponent. They gave up more corner threes than any other team in the NBA, and opponents didn't hit them very well. And the fact that it was falling for the Celtics, that sucks. That's going to lead to a loss, right? Because it fell right into their hands and they made the shot. So kudos to the Celtics for consistently hitting those shots. I think at one point they hit 9 of 10 of their corner threes. So again, credit to them, and they deserve the victory. The Raptors simply didn't look the same. I mean, than they have in the bubble. If we look at how they played against any other team other than the Celtics, because let's face it, both of their losses in the bubble have been to the Celtics, and both of them have looked eerily similar, where the Celtics are making tough shots, and in this case, a few wide open shots. And the Raptors simply were not. I think the biggest thing that jumped out to me from an individual standpoint was Fred VanVleet. He shot 2 of 11 from 3, And that second three-pointer didn't fall until garbage time. So there was a point in the game where he shook free and he was just left wide open in the elbow. And the elbow's a layup for him. And he missed that too. That just something wasn't right with Van Vliet's shot. It looked very much like Fred Van Vliet from the Philly series from last year and from the Orlando series from last year. There was just too much length being thrown at him. And it's unfortunate, yeah. But at the same time, I think that there's enough of a track record there for Van Vliet throughout this bubble and throughout this season, and even throughout the second half of last year's playoff season to show that he can absolutely bounce back. And I was going to save this for the end, but I'm going to say it right now. When you guys listen to this, or maybe by this time tomorrow on Monday, he will have reunited with Fred Van Vliet Jr. So Boston, I hope you enjoyed this victory, because the magical powers of Fred Van Vliet Jr. are about to be unleashed on this team.
Get ready for that Disney magic.
No, for sure. I feel like out of all the players that were had some spark in them was Serge Ibaka.
Yes.
When he came off the bench and 26 minutes, 15 points, 9 rebounds. He right off the gate, I guess had a little bit more energy than everybody else. I just feel like outside of the bench, our entire starting lineup was struggling. I mean, DeMarcus Gasol did not look very good. Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, again, Jay Urie saying it, when we play against larger guards, it just doesn't bode well when it comes to our Fred VanVleet and Kyle. And Pascal, like, I feel like Pascal just has to learn how to don't play for foul calls. And I know that Kyle Lowry kind of does that, but he's been doing that his entire career. When Siakam goes in and tries to forcefully get those calls and get those buckets, it doesn't bode well for him. So he still has to learn that, yes, he's going to be the focal point, but don't play for the foul. Let the fouls come to you. Let the game come to you. And, you know, even some of the rush three-pointers, like those, he can make those very easily. But when he gets in his own head that he has to get going, the only way to get going really is to get like easy buckets, the layups, the free throws, and trying to force yourself into a crowd of three or four Celtics isn't going to do it, because then you're just going to be screaming for a foul. You're going to get in your head. You're going to get into foul trouble, which he was in the first half. And there you have it. Like, the biggest takeaway for me is I'm definitely not going to blame the refs on this. I definitely think that the Raptors, you know, the Celtics shot better. Those Celtics played better. The Celtics had more energy, and they definitely had a game plan that they executed. The Raptors did not. They had some spurts here and there. They cut it to like 12 at the mid of the third quarter, but that was it. However, I do want to say that the refs definitely had an impact on the Raptors in the beginning of the game. So when you have someone like, you know, Ed Malloy calling every single foul down the floor against the Raptors, you're going to get them out of a flow, while you're going to allow the Celtics to be in a flow, getting those easy buckets and getting those free throws. Mm-hmm. I want to say that's not, obviously, I'm not trying to say that is the end all be all, but I want to say the refs had a definite impact in the beginning of the game that set the tone for the rest of the game.
But at the same time, it did and it didn't, because the first quarter is the only time that we got completely outscored. If you look at the second and the fourth quarter, it was only a marginal loss, you know, four points combined, and we actually beat them in the third by two. So the only quarter that we got squashed was the first. And as you said, it's a momentum burster that, unfortunately, once our shot wasn't hitting and that happened, that's basically it. We couldn't get back into the swing of things. And it's unfortunate, because the numbers, we lost by a lot. We got smacked. But at the same time, what if that first quarter wasn't like that? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, the fouls, I think, was something like 10 to 5, 10 or sorry, 11 fouls to 5, you know, in favor, I guess, against the Raptors. In that, at some point before the end of the first quarter, and by the time the Celtics had built out a 32-13 lead, that was it. Like, the rest of the game was played fairly evenly, right? Toronto would try to make a run, Boston would answer, and it was pretty much back and forth. But to both of your guys' points, the referees kind of messed up the rhythm of the Raptors, and the Celtics pounced early, and that was all it was. And, you know, Jack Armstrong mentioned it on the broadcast that, you know, it's kind of silly to say this, but he felt that it was needed to be said, is that the Raptors have to win the first quarter for the sake of just getting some confidence against the Celtics squad, which has now defeated the Raptors 4 out of 5 times. We can say what we want about Siakam not being there for 2 of the games. We can say what we want about, you know, Gasol missing a couple of the games as well. But at the end of the day, you know, and Jason said this off the top, the Raptors just simply missed shots. And, you know, if Fred VanVleet is going to continue missing shots, which I honestly don't think he will, I think the Raptors are going to be in a better position in game 2. And that's that's the great thing. Game 2, these scores don't carry over. Game 2 is going to start off 0-0. And for the first time since before the bubble, I anticipate the Raptors will actually hold a lead on the Boston Celtics.
I mean, it has to happen. And look, at the end of the day, what separates a star from a superstar, in my opinion, is the fact that their headspace is not for rent. Somebody like a Jason Tatum is on his way to becoming a superstar because, like, regardless, the only other Celtics player to reach 20 above points is Marcus Smart, who I guess had a field day with the three-point line. But Jason Tatum, out of everybody, all things considered, looked like the most steady person. Not to say that the other Celtics didn't, but he looked like the most steady person. He is clearly the superstar of the series. So all we need to do is figure out how to generate our own superstars. Clearly, and you know, people like Paul George have talked about this, and other players, the bubble is very depressing. And it's very easy to get stuck in a mental space. So hopefully with these family members coming over, like VanVleet Jr., that'll generate something with the Raptors, because Siakam, we've never seen Siakam in a slump until this year, specifically after the hiatus. And to see him only score like 3.5 points out of our all-star, our face of the franchise next to Lowry, there's got to be something to – we need that spice back in Spicy P. I feel like with some downtime, with some reassessment of this game – something will happen, and I don't think this is a lost cause. VanVleet's not going to be having an off game like this again, because this seems like an anomaly from what we've seen since last year in the Milwaukee series. Like, this seems like an anomaly for VanVleet. I think that's going to be okay. At the end of the day, we just have to hit those shots even better, but the primary thing is figuring out the wing threes are going to kill us. And let's be honest, they can shoot on that team. So we have to figure that out. And Tatum's got height, which also doesn't help. He's a shooter and he's got height. So we have to figure that out. We have to basically just not let it get to our heads, which is easier said than done. But we're the Toronto Raptors. We're champions, sans Kawhi. And look, Kawhi may have been able to pull us through this, like he's pulling the Clippers, who are in a similar funk, through their series. But we have what it takes, and they just have to realize that.
As per Josh Lewumper, again, he post-game asked Lowry what happened, what was going on. And Lowry said, you know, I just think we didn't play well enough to win the basketball game. No excuses made. We got to play harder and execute better. Yeah, it was emotional, but no excuses. The Boston Celtics beat us. And and that's where it is. I think the Boston Celtics just played better. I feel like the Raptors will bounce back. But, you know, I don't want to take it out. And I'm not going to say anything about the emotional aspect, but I do feel like there must be some sort of impact. And I, you know, these players are also obviously people, right? And we can't think of them as commodity. We can't start thinking of them as people that just entertain us, because they're not. They are people. And this is where I want to start and stop to kind of reflect and actually get a chance to talk to you guys, because I feel like we haven't really had a chance to actually talk, you know, stuff. And, you know, I start with the start of this conversation when we started to even connect, we kind of stopped and said, you know, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. It's been a kind of hard couple of weeks and in a hard 2020. So I don't know. I just wanted to get this moment just to stop. You know, I know that this is a Raptors podcast and I know that this is a basketball related podcast, but at the end of the day, there's still so much going on. And I thought it'd be a nice space for all of us to talk about it. And with the news yesterday a few days ago about Chadwick Boseman passing away, as well as Clifford Robinson passing away. Today we learned that Wayne Embry's wife, Terry Embry, passed away. And so there's a lot of emotions going on. And for me, I feel like it's tough to put into words exactly what I'm going through. And it's, again, it's not about me, especially when it comes to, you know, all the social justice that's going on as well. But for these players, it's so difficult to kind of take that away and just focus on basketball, because that's not what they're there for. They're not there to play just basketball. They're there to educate people, to highlight Black Lives Matter, to show that there is a social injustice that there has to be done. And especially in the last couple, you know, 3 days ago when they boycotted the game, mm-hmm. and there's just so much happening. And I wanted to get your input. I wanted to get both Jay and Dre. I just wanted to know what your thoughts are when you heard about when the Milwaukee Bucks boycotted the game, when we heard that Fred and also Jaylen Brown were the ones who kind of started the ball rolling to think about that. It might be a good time not to play basketball. What are your thoughts, guys?
So Jaylen Brown brought it up around the same time as Van Vliet, because he basically said, I wear the number 7 and all I can see when I see my jersey is 7 shots.
Yeah.
And I just want to get something straight. We're not talking about necessarily the person that it happened to, but the fact that regardless of what the situation was, and this is what bugs me so much, why is it that when it comes to a person of color, that they're trying to find reasons, like there's fentanyl in George Floyd's system or whatever the hell. Why do we have to find reasons to justify this? But when it happens to be a white person, it's, oh, he worked at the church, or his mother loved him. Like, why do we have to justify why they are human beings, but persons of color, specifically black men and women, were problematic and they should have reacted better to the law or whatever the hell people are trying to say. That's the problem, in my opinion. It doesn't matter. The point is, Jaylen Brown sees 7 shots because those 7 shots could have been to anybody. If it was a 1 shot to somebody who was non-complying to get them on the ground because the cop feared for his life, that's a different story. You don't need 7 shots in the back to paralyze a guy. I think that's disgusting, and that's where it doesn't matter who it was. The point is, we know, first off, that there's corruption in the police force. Secondly, that if we can guess, a good chunk of this had to do with the person's race. And we know that, unfortunately, because time and time and time again, we've been proven right about thinking this way. So when people want to say, oh, you're boycotting somebody who did this, and it's, that doesn't matter. They're not boycotting because of that. They're boycotting because, yet again, and with these comments, that's proving their point that you're not looking at what happened here, that a cop paralyzed somebody. Doesn't matter what they did, that they shouldn't be doing that to civilians. If, you know, if you believed in a life for a life, did this guy kill anybody? No. So why is he open fired on? Like, why is that open game? So there are so many problems with this type of stuff. And at the end of the day, I also think, and I don't mean to rant too much, I also think it's disgusting that people insist that people like LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, that they play basketball and shut up and entertain us. No, they're also human beings as well. Yes, you watch basketball to escape politics, but what the hell are these guys supposed to do to escape politics? They were forced to play during the pandemic. Granted, everything went well. The bubble has been a great success, but do you think they want to be separated from their families, which they were until now? No. Do you think they want to play in a time where they could die? And some NBA players have been directly affected by COVID. No. Do you think that they're in the right mindset to be playing? Looking at a lot of players like Paul George, a lot of the Raptors? No. Clearly not. So, and at the end of the day, they're human beings as well. This is how they will discuss what they want to discuss, just like you have every right to discuss whatever you want. This is what they're doing. If you don't like it, don't watch. I don't know how to say it any better than that, but you say shut up and dribble to them, shut up and walk away from the TV. That's what I'm saying. At the end of the day, they're human beings. They're allowed to have to voice their opinion. And if you don't follow it for whatever stupid ass reason, don't. And that's all I've got to say about that. Black Lives Matter.
Well, you know what? It's before the NBA restarted, there was a lot of discussion between the Players Association and the NBA about what a restart would look like. And a large portion of why the players agreed to come back was because they were promised that they would be allowed to have some social justice messaging, right? But let's take a step back and think, what exactly did the NBA agree to? What exactly did they do? Yeah, there's Black Lives Matter on the court. Okay, what else? There are predetermined, censored messages on the back of their jerseys, not messages locally, not messages that the players want to do themselves. No, messages that were predetermined by the NBA. This is your list of what you're allowed to. We talked about this in a previous podcast, right? It's, you know, we will quote unquote allow all the social justice messaging, but really, are they? I don't think so. And bringing the Raptors and Masai into this, if we remember when Masai was first sued by that sheriff in Alameda County, Adam Silver, his response was, Masai needs to learn to avoid these types of situations. That didn't sound right at the time. And after, when he was acquitted, did Adam Silver say sorry? Did Adam Silver say anything? Because he didn't.
That's true.
So the reason why I bring these up is because what the NBA has shown up until now is that there has not been enough action, whether it's from Adam Silver, whether it's been from the owners and the players. Again, in addition to the fact that they are mentally exhausted from being inside this bubble, if they're seeing all this happening outside the bubble, that was the boiling point, right? And these players said, the owners aren't doing anything. Adam Silver's not doing enough. So we are taking a stand. We are going to stop playing games. And look at what happened. Within 24 hours, this social justice coalition was formed. Why wasn't this formed 2 months ago? Why wasn't this formed when the discussion of a restart was on the table? So the boycott was successful in that light. And the players have already shown they can do it. They will happily boycott again if this social justice coalition doesn't act upon what it's supposed to be acting upon. So I think that where we're at right now is a step in the right direction.
I also think that this was the most genuine protest they had, because like you said, when the NBA was going to return, the players agreed upon it because, you know, they were going to bring out that social message. But at a certain point, the backdrop of Black Lives Matter, the t-shirts that they're wearing, Black Lives Matter, the WNBA, who have been the forefront of it all and showing and being as most powerful and vocal about the inequality of it, at some point there isn't going to be enough done when people are just watching it on TV. It will start to, you know, be in the background. And I feel like that's what the players are thinking. And because of them at the bubble, I feel like for them, they aren't allowed to kind of be participate as much as they want to, because they are not there. Right. And the whole point of the bubble was so they can show that they are participating. So because the boycott happened, it wasn't from the NBA agreement. It wasn't like, you know, the NBA saying, yeah, you can do this. And just like, you know, those messages that they agreed upon to put on the back. This was no, that's enough is enough. And I'm proud that it was from a feeling. Right. So when we heard that it was the Milwaukee Bucks who stopped play, but it was really George Hill who knew that he didn't want to play when that game five was happening. And then when that happened, you got Sterling Brown, you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, all of them were like, we're going to be with our brother and we're not going to play as well. And that's where it came from. It wasn't coming from the higher ups. It was coming from the players. And from there, and if anyone asks, and I saw a lot of like, what is a boycott going to do? Honestly, at this point, you know, 24 hours later, a lot has happened. The fact that a lot of the NBA people who are working for the NBA also went on their own strike. And so they could speak to authorities and speak to the higher ups and speak to the counties and try to do certain changes. And, you know, now that the NBA is also not allowing, but they're making everybody who has a stadium all the 30 teams that have a stadium to have an actual voting poll. So again, yes, it's strange that none of this happened already, but at the same time, these are the things that are happening because of the boycott. And no, this isn't going to change, you know, racism from America or mm-hmm. Canada or around the world for that matter. And this isn't going to stop social injustice 24 hours later or 48 hours later. This comes as long as it starts something in order to end something, that's what matters, right? And if that boycott meant that it was going to start a change, an actual change, that's what's important. You know what I mean? And so I'm proud of these guys for taking that stand and using that platform. And I'm also proud. And at first I didn't know how I felt about them going to play again, because like, you know, what's the point? If you're going to go all out, then, you know, show your force and not play. But at the same time, now I've realized that they're there for a reason. They're there, yes, to play a game. And again, it is a game, but they're also, if I feel like the powers that be, if they can stick together, they can do a lot more if they're together instead of they are separate. So And now I've come to an agreement with myself, I guess, that I'm happy that they're still playing again.
Mm-hmm. And I guess on the topic of like stuff that's happening currently, I think all of us want to have like a couple of things to say about the recent deaths that we've had. First off, Chadwick Boseman, who actually has a huge connection with the NBA. He was in the Celebrity All-Star Game, and he also helped with the dunk contest as one of the judges. And obviously the Victor Oladipo dunk, which gave homage to King T'Challa or Black Panther. Went way too soon. I've got a write-up for it on my website, August 31st, filmsfatale.com. In short, basically, guy went way too soon. He was a fantastic talent, and he always used his platform to speak on social issues and brought up Black history in a number of his films, including 42 with Jackie Robinson, and Get On Up with James Brown, and even with Black Panther, you know, that's Wakanda Forever synonymous with what a lot of people are saying in relation to like police brutality and as of late, like Black Lives Matter. I think it's synonymous, and obviously he was always on the forefront of that type of thing, and it's unfortunate because we could use his voice now more than ever. And cancer sucks. He helped others with cancer when he was silently battling it himself. He's a true fighter, and rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah. If I could say one more thing before you go, I leave it off to you, Jay, because this will be the last thing I'd say. But when it comes to Chadwick Boseman, of course, I don't think any of us knew him, but the fact that, and the news that came out is that he died because of cancer that he was diagnosed 4 years ago. So to think about that, to realize that he was working, filming, going through these presses, speaking to, speaking to a community that felt like, and with in regards to Black Panther, speaking to a community that really felt like they don't really have a history, right? And I feel like when it comes to Chadwick, the fact that he went through all of that while also being diagnosed with cancer, while also fighting through all of that pain without saying anything, without saying a word, and just going through his day, knowing that he was going to inspire millions, and he has, and he will continue to, that's very, very inspirational. No one, you don't know, you have no idea what people are going through and in all walks of life. So, you know, the last thing I want to say is just be kind to everyone, be kind to one another, please, because you don't know what's going on. And most of the time they're just trying to make the world better, which was what Chadwick was doing. So again, yeah, rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, it's been a tough few days, in addition to the shooting of Jacob Blake and the numerous deaths. I mean, the 2020 just continues to hit us with hard ones. The death of Lute Olson, Hall of Fame coach from University of Arizona, happened over the weekend. He died at the age of 85. He suffered a stroke in 2019, and he's been in hospice care ever since. He has he's so renowned in Arizona basketball that the Lute Olson Award was named after, obviously named after him, and is awarded to the nation's top Division I player in college basketball. So that's a huge loss to the college basketball community. To the NBA community, the loss of Clifford Robinson is huge. He was a man who was ahead of his time. He was a two-time All-NBA, All-Defensive NBA second team, Sixth Man of the Year winner in 1993 and former All-Star in 94. But he was a part of that Blazers squad that made a title run and fell short to the Pistons and to the Bulls. But he was such an integral part that, you know, if you were to time travel to the present day, his game would still fit. He was the type of big man that could be very versatile and play both ways, and he very much could fit in today's game. So, you know, it sucks that he, you know, left this earth too early. He died at the age of 53, and you know, our prayers are with his friends and family. And the last person I do want to mention here is Wayne Embry's wife, Terry. Now, her passing is obviously, you know, very tragic, and, you know, they've been married for 62 years. So God has definitely been watching over them. But the story with Terry is that, you know, she walked in Selma. She marched in Selma with Dr. Martin Luther King. She walked alongside Yvonne Robertson, who is Oscar Robertson's wife. And she was very much a very avid and solid civic rights advocate. And it's quite jarring that, you know, despite that march happening 55 years ago, we are still fighting those same fights today. So I guess the plea here, and I guess the message from this podcast, is simply to keep fighting. I mean, and this is, it's sad that we are still making this fight at this time, but at the same time, the progress that's being made cannot be lost. So I think that's where I will leave it at, is, you know, let's not let Terry Embry's death go in vain.
Yes, absolutely. There you have it. I thank you guys for allowing us to talk about this. I feel like we never really had a chance to talk about it amongst ourselves, so I thought this would be appropriate for us to talk about it. So again, rest in peace, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Bozeman, Mr. Olson, and Miss Embry. Hope you would all rest in power.